okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Welcome to Fake Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Just met one on the board. We also have Mr. Frank Fahey doing reporter work for Stacks and Jacks in, where the hell is he? Erie, Pennsylvania?
Oh, I'm about 10 miles south of Erie. I'm in Findlay Lake, New York.
And what are you doing there? Fishing?
Undercover.
Well, that's the thing. So you're like our version of Jimmy Olsen, cub reporter?
I guess that makes you Superman. No, you're Perry White.
Perry White, yeah. Don't call me Chief. Yeah, what a great.
Okay, Chief.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you are the Chief. No, I'm here on my way to Vermont, driving through eastern Ohio and Erie, Pennsylvania, and western New York. Business hotel stays are not recovering. Susan and I are one of two customers in a very nice Comfort Inn.
Really? I thought the guys on the road were doing a little better, and ones like downtown were not.
Well, this is on the road. It may have never done well, but it's clean. It's nice.
Good. I mean, it's a. I haven't really heard much about the road guys. I see the ones a couple times I was down in Indiana. It looked like the parking lot was, you know, half full or something.
I think Indiana, Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, the Midwest seems to be a lot more vibrant than out here in the East.
It could be. I know my...
And my son just went to BU for grad school in oil painting, and you walk anywhere in Boston, if you're outside, you got to have a mask on.
Well, what does that do to all the cameras on the facial rack?
Well, hey, great. I'm all for it. The Chinese will come up with a workaround.
Yeah, the Chinese. This whole thing with football where the players aren't wearing them and you have the coaches and the idiots sitting in the skyboxes are, the donor sitting there by himself. I don't get that. Anyway, SP Futures, I didn't want to even say this, down 51. Dow Futures down 525, NASDAQ down 142. So, ugly morning. So last night, Frank, we opened down some. So it was around 23. Then I checked later, they're up a point, and now we're hammered. So we're not doing so hot.
I have no idea what's going on.
They're talking about
Europe's down 3%.
Well, they're talking about more restrictions again. And last Friday when Carl was on, it's pretty interesting. Evidently, when you talk about follow the science, I'm almost saying, Frank, here you got to follow. Follow the class warfare here. It's, he was saying evidently Tennessee, out of all places, has instituted this big tracer thing into COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And, evidently they've published their stuff. They assume nobody reads it. Well, evidently the guy came out and closed all the bars again like a few weeks ago or something. So Carl, of course, digs through all the stuff and he finds out that virtually all, not all, but the biggest sites are construction and nursing homes. Because the bars, virtually none were traced to bars. Yet they closed the bars, but they're never going to close a construction site because people like the governor, I'll say this because I see it all over the place, they don't know where the construction people are and don't care. They're not their kinds of guys. And somebody's liable to go from the bar and they might meet them or a restaurant. But the idea of construction workers, garbage truck drivers, policemen, anybody who's serving you, it's okay for them to be out there. Or am I just being weird on this?
I may pull you back from the dark side yet, Tom.
God. I don't know. Somebody's going to have to.
You drive by construction sites. I guarantee 45 years ago when we saw a construction site, it was a union construction site. And yes, they did keep minorities out. I drive by a construction site now, and I be very interested, especially road construction sites, in seeing what the true demographics of that workforce is.
Well, I wonder myself, because I don't, the new economics of road construction, and I don't quite get it, but I wish I had time to study it, actually, is when they did the Ryan years and years and years ago, God, I was still in college, for God's sake. So, like I said, years ago, the idea was to work 24/7 and not get off as fast as you could. Well, now these guys get these contracts, and they don't care if it takes 7, 8, 9, 10 years. I mean, it's Jane Burn Interchange, you go by there, you got guys working shifts. And if they're making a pour that day, there's 15, 20 guys there. But then next day, you don't see a soul. I mean, are they just not hiring people or what? Or the contracts are not written in a way where it incentivizes these guys to be early or something. Something's different, Frank. There's nobody there. I mean,
I wonder if somebody from the Traffic Institute at Northwestern would be able to come on and set us straight. That's an interesting group of folks.
Yeah, well, I'd love to do that because, I guess most of the guys, I don't know if they're all white or they're not or whatever, but it almost doesn't matter because there's not very many of them there. Now, one of my brother, it's kind of an odd duck. You ever met Ralph Mint?
Tim's buddy? I played softball with him.
Yeah, well, that's right. His girlfriend was our came the day we played the whole day tournament, right?
Yep, and I played with him a couple other times.
Anyway, Ralph's somewhat of a character, but he's an iron worker, and those guys will go for like a year or two without. But now he claims that for the next like 7 years, you know, they're widening the tri-state yet again. And there's going to be work for iron workers. So, you know, and he...
Well, have you seen... The state's paying to move it for, what is that, the UPS, right by Mile-Long Bridge?
Yeah.
They're moving that sucker. You ought to see the job they're doing there.
I don't... For those of you around the country, the Tri-State Tollway is a... Well, it's a circumferential around Chicago is the name of it, the technical name. Well, since there's a lake on one side, it doesn't go all the way around. So essentially, it's a bypass. And it was built with bonds, and the idea was the tolls were going to pay off the bonds, and then there was going to be no more tolls. Well, in fact, tolls have nothing but go straight up, even though the original bonds would have been paid off in, what, 1970 maybe? And so now all they do is find other ways to build it. So if it's five lanes, they got to do six or seven or something. Matter of fact, one of my buddies, this poor guy... Irish guy had like, I don't know how many kids he had, but anyway, died young. And he was the attorney that had the condemnation on the whole Tri-State Tollway. So we're talking about how many miles from Wisconsin, Indiana. So whenever they decide to go outside a lane, you probably have to go get property from, what, 50,000 people? 25,000 people? It's got to be a huge number, Frank. And that his firm did the condemnation procedures for like all those places. You imagine that the size of a book that is?
And it's right on the county line for a huge chunk.
Yeah.
The Cook County, DuPage County line. So I'm sure they're taking it from the poor people in Cook County, too. Let's move it just a little to the east.
Well, they're at the point now where the engineering is such that they just got to go where they can go.
I mean, well, they have a major problem right now going over the train yards in, what is that, Franklin Park or Bensonville? The train companies do not want to work with the Tri-State. It's a major condemnation, which means the lawyers love it.
Well, it's all about money. It's all about access. But, I mean, the thing they're doing, they're going over the DuPage River. I mean, it's a huge undertaking. I mean, you wouldn't think they're... It's not just they're adding a lane on each side. They're building like another whole unit and then going to mesh them together somehow. So if you look at it, it looks like they're building like a four-lane expressway, right?
And to boot, on the Tri-State, they have to make every bridge that goes over the Tri-State wider, move the support so that the lanes, the wider lanes or the wider directional sides can go underneath a bridge.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty... It's pretty scary. Anyway, all right, why the hell, what's going on here, Frank? Somewhere along the line here, and I don't know what it is, it's almost like I don't, it's 2020. Now, Ruth Ginsburg dies Friday night, which I was very sorry to see. I thought that lady by sheer will was going to make it to the end of the year. Somehow she didn't. I mean, it's your time, I guess. Do these people, I mean, whether you're Republican or Democrat, I don't, when somebody as little as 4 years ago says one thing and then comes out and says the other, do they have any idea what it makes them sound like? I mean, there are people.
Senator.
Yeah. Like, but I mean, does anybody, I mean, talk about, they wonder why they get no respect. I mean, Lindsey Graham, McConnell, I mean, of course, we had any respect for those two people anyway. I never did. You know, it's not like they're Republicans. I just think they, I mean, he's got something on Lindsey. I don't know what it is. I mean, I can only guess, but I'm not going to guess on the air. But something's weird. And now they're going to throw somebody up there.
And hopefully we move to where it doesn't matter that he has something on Lindsey. Hopefully our society's almost there.
Well,
you know?
So then I read this thing. I was going to send it to you, but I didn't know if you guys had Bloomberg and could read it. But actually, it was on Yahoo, I think. But anyway, the guy was talking about that the Republicans better be careful. And I did not know this. That the amount of Supreme Court justices is not in the Constitution. I did not know.
Oh, no, you can. That's what they call packing the Supreme Court. You can change the denominator. So, you know, you got 6 out of 9, fine, we'll make it 13. Buzzer.
Well, that's what this guy was saying, is if the Democrats, if the Republicans really push this and it gets really ugly, and they can put this lady on there, they jam her through. I don't want any more, this whole idea of, and I'm just going to go through the numbers here. This has nothing to do with Republican or Democrat. But they were saying that the first thing they could do if the Democrats win the White House and the Senate is, first of all, bag the filibuster. Because that's evidently a House rule or a chamber rule, not in the Constitution. And they could say, guess what, we're going to 15 in the Supreme Court and we're going to put 6 on in the next 2 months.
Yep.
I mean, I wouldn't like to see that. That's a new low yet again. But where does this end? I talked about it last time.
Well, there's also, I think the Republicans may back off, and here's why. We have guys who are running for Senate in 2 years that are borderline. If they cram this through, the Democrats will come up with enough money that they will be blue senators in 2 years.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
And that was an article I read last night. I don't know. So I'm talking like I agree. But I don't know. But that makes sense to me, or at least conceivable.
Well, the idea that they would jam this through, I don't get. And they, plus, this lady looks like she's pretty young. I'm not big on putting all these young people in her. It's a long time, you know.
Which lady? The one, the Cuban?
No.
The woman of Cuban descent in Florida, or Coney Barrett from South Bend?
The blonde one from Chicago. She's from the appeals court here.
She's from South Bend.
All right. You know her?
And I'm a little hesitant to talk about. Yes, I do know.
Is she an old girlfriend? She's an old girlfriend, and you split up
your shoes. A group called People of Praise. It's called a parachurch. Women have a special... I've known it from the beginning. My parents were there at the beginning, and it left because my mother didn't like the way they treat women. There's a lot I know about it.
This is one of these...
Some of which is probably best not said on any sort of public forum.
So this is like one of these church or what's happening now joints?
No, it's Catholic.
You're kidding.
It's ecumenical, but it's very conservative.
It's not as far as a
church in the school in the old Vincent Bendix estate. They have about 3,000 people.
This isn't. They're like who are the other knuckleheads? My buddy.
Lots of them.
No. Who's the? They're not Opus Dei, are they?
No. Opus Dei is actually closer to the church. Okay.
You're kidding.
That's a conservative group. I grew up with all these stuff, so I know them pretty well. I grew up in a family that was more Catholic worker, Christian family movement, stuff like that. Dorothy Day. Opus Dei's conservative. I really don't know what People of Praise are.
Opus Dei, the guy got booted from the church. What the hell's his name?
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of, you know, corruption goes to the top of any institution.
Lefevre, wasn't that his name?
Yeah, something like that. And also you had the huge contributor who had a religious order in Mexico.
I went to a... Manny, did I ever tell you this story? I went to an Opus Dei funeral. This is the weirdest thing I've... Honestly, one of the weirdest things that's ever happened in my life. One of my buddies from college, his parents were one of these kind of guys. Or these people. So we went down, we visited him in Florida when we went to the football game. They had an altar in their house. And I never put two and two together as to why one would have an altar in their house. Because they would never go to a regular church. Maybe, you know, they turned, the priest turned around and faced people after the second
ecumenical council
in 1964. That's how long it's been. And this one, of course, the priest stood the other way. It was in Latin. I didn't go there. I never put two and two. They never go to a regular church. So, but the guy's name was Steve, would always head out to some special church, even when we were all going to church. He'd, like, go to some other place. I'm like, what the hell's going on? Well, anyway, his dad dies. And we have the old man's 98. We got five people. We pile in. We drive up to some little town in Michigan out in the middle of nowhere, up in Kevinsburg. And all these people start showing up. It's the oddest-looking group I've ever seen. So one of the ladies was with us. She's been on the show, Jean Mirabito. She was Jean Pearl back then. All the ladies start bitching at her blue streak because she didn't have a hat on. She's like, God, I haven't had a hat on in church in 20 years.
Did she have the white gloves?
No, she put a handkerchief on her head, and I guess they were still scrumping at her. But the guy gives this eulogy. He starts talking about heretics in our midst. And I'm looking around. I'm going, we're the heretics. All we did was show up for the funeral. And I'm sitting there going, this is odd. I feel a little uncomfortable. But there's heretics in our midst, and we just lost a soldier in the fight. Nothing good about the guy or anything, but now we're like one man down, and we got heretics right in this very room. And I'm thinking, this is, what do I do? Get up and leave? Or anyway, we got out of there pretty quick, to say the least. We didn't sit around.
Well, we're going to have right wing Catholic hit squads after us in a few minutes.
Oh, I know,
here, Chief.
Did you see the this thing yesterday? I tell you what, I'm not all of what Trump says is wrong. I honestly do think, Frank, that we're moving light speed toward this mail-in voting. And as Jack Callahan used to say, we don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way. I don't think this has been proven out whatsoever at this level, to be honest with you. And so this guy puts I saw this on YouTube. I just heard about it this morning. The guy puts a toilet in his front lawn. It says, please deposit your mail-in ballots here. So some lady is suing him, saying that some people might get confused and actually deposit them there. Well, if that's
between him and the lady.
Well, yeah, but I'm thinking,
Tom, I'm going to take away your YouTube privileges. Seriously.
Well, no, I heard this on the radio this morning. But I'm thinking, if we actually have people that are dumb enough to put their thing in there, maybe they should have to go to the voting place and at least find it.
Oh, yeah, maybe. You know, why don't we give them three-fifths of a vote?
Who?
The people that are too dumb to vote.
Well, I mean, if you...
Hey, that's in the Constitution.
Well, yeah.
I mean, we're half a step away from bringing it back.
Well, you know, everybody thinks... I mean, and the thing, that's what I don't... The Republicans that talk about how the voting should be the way it is, just come out and say it, Frank. Just come out and say it. My vote should count more than yours. I mean, I don't care about that, because...
All votes should count the same. I'm remarkably consistent on that, and so are you, and so are Maddie.
I will tell you this.
Why don't we have a day off to vote like they do in Europe?
You do if you work for the county. Here.
I don't say anything about... I'm on so many enemies lists right now.
Well, but you know, if you are somebody that has a business, has a home, pays taxes, sort of gets involved, and all of a sudden you see somebody showing up with a bus either from the hills of Pennsylvania or someplace in the city, and you see people passing out money to vote, you do sort of wonder about yours counting the same. I mean, that's just instinct, Frank. Now, I'm not saying I want to change it. I don't. But there's a lot of people who feel they put a lot more into their vote than other people, shall we say, and have a lot more behind it.
This is a democracy, you know.
I know that. I didn't say I wanted to change
it. Don't get me going.
I didn't say I wanted to change it. I just said I understand the feeling.
Well, no, they want their money to count for more than other people's money.
I understand.
You know, the payoff's in.
I'm just saying I understand the feeling. I didn't say I agreed with it.
Oh, I know. I know you don't.
I'm trying to be like SPAC. I didn't say I agreed. I said I understood.
Well, yeah, but we have to be careful not to do the full Donald Trump and say, well, many people say.
Oh, no, but I will absolutely be out there of agreeing with Trump that this mail order vote thing has gotten ahead of speed here. And the reason why I say this is legit, I think legit. People can listen on their own, but I have a lady friend of many years. I haven't seen her in ages, but she used to be a judge forever, Frank. And they always used to, at the time, she claims they would take the absentee vote and bring them to the precinct. And the precinct people there, the judges in the precinct, would check off the absentee votes against the book and see nobody had already voted, that type of thing. Just like you would if you were a person who walked in there. All of a sudden, one year, the county decides, and what's his name, Claypool was running against Stroger. And all of a sudden, they decide, oh, no, we're just going to take the absentee ballots and bring them down to the county building and we'll count them. So Claypool ends up with a bunch of people, walks down the street to the county building. Of course, everybody said he was just a weenie and, you know, he couldn't take a loss, that kind of thing. He had every right to say, why the change? Where's the judges? Where's the stuff? How are we policing this? I think he had every right to question that, Frank.
But Tom, you're complaining about the mail-in voting, but you aren't complaining about 10% of the people in Florida being disenfranchised or the closing down of polling places.
I didn't say I agreed with that.
Primarily blue areas of towns, that people are going to have to wait for 10 hours. It's all part of the same game, and it has to stop on both sides.
I understand it has to stop on both sides, but I'm saying an avalanche. I probably have gotten 5 pieces of mail encouraging me to mail in vote. Why? Who's paying for that? I'm 40 yards from the voting.
The parties.
No.
Jesse White pays for it. The state wants you to do it. Right now, they have a problem getting judges.
Well, that's true.
Because the average age of a judge in Illinois is 63 years old. They don't want to sit there.
What are these people out of work?
Outsiders breathe on them for 8 hours or 14 hours.
When are we going to get over this fear of this COVID? Ever?
No, that I'll be wearing a mask the rest of my life, and that's just as well. But
I know why you're wearing
plastic surgery.
I know why you're wearing it, so you can't be picked up on camera.
Right.
Why would you want to do that? Healthy people don't wear masks.
They do all across the world.
Chinese.
I want to stay healthy.
I can see where you'd wear one in California because the air is no good. The Chinese wear it in Beijing because they can't breathe.
The air is no good here. I am in Western New York, and the haze is astounding.
You think it's all from? You think it's all from California?
It's smoke.
Some of it's from California.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, well, they don't have it down in Louisiana. We're getting like their hurricane of the week. Anyway, all right, Frank. While I still have you, we're now down 59. What is going on here? Is this a general degradation here, or what is this? I've got every single. The only stock I got is up in the. Dow is a Walmart up $1.30. I got Apple down $3.34. Boeing down $2.90. What's going to save this Boeing? But I'm not going to ask anybody to short it because I have
The federal government, because we cannot lose the ability to make transport and fighting aircraft.
Where are we going to get all this money?
Oh, you print it.
All right, okay, that's
it's all fake.
Well, but at some point, this all happens where it's not fake. At gold down 20
bucks. I understand, but where's the fiscal leadership? We used to rely on the Republicans for it.
When they're spending it, it's just as easy as the Democrats. Doesn't even matter.
I know.
Yeah, what happened to the Tea Party?
Oh, isn't Carl a bigwig in it?
Yeah, he was. Hey, what's all right? So I've got a bunch of people calling me. You counsel me as an investment advisor. Me, that is. I've got people who have started to call me the last few weeks, nervous about the market. They're thinking about maybe doing something. the hell, Frank. If you want to do something, you got to do something. I mean, first thing I counseled him, I said, trust your instincts. You called me for a reason. You're not feeling comfortable. Do something about it. And you can't get people to do it, Frank. Can't get people to do it. Absolutely, people.
As my dad would say to me, Frank, are you ready to take the bat off your shoulder?
Yeah, basically. And they're not. And,
No. They want a tire kick. And people dislike change more than anything else. They dislike change. So even if you were a liberal, you're more comfortable when the white man's in charge. I take it to politics all the time. But nobody wants change. We want the status quo.
Well, I think we're actually being disserviced by... Normally, I know people on TV just talk their own game, and they want you to send them money. So they're always bullish. But the idea the last 2 weeks where they start telling you how great the economy is, what are they looking at, Frank?
They didn't drive across I-80, and now I've done I-90, and now I'm going to do I-86. It's not that great.
You may have to report
I'm sitting looking at a motel with two cars in the parking lot on an interstate.
Well, Mr. Olson, I think you better call him later in the week and give us a full report.
Thursday.
All right, bud. S&P futures up 50. I'm sorry, down 57. NASDAQ futures down 186. We're all December now. It's the top step. Frank, thank you. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Just met Weber. We have Mr. Jan Flanagan waiting in the wings. A lot of stuff to talk about here. The market's all over the place around the world. Not so hot this morning. S&P futures down 56. NASDAQ futures down 181. They're usually the worst. They're not. Today, the Dow is the worst, down 548. It's a whole 2%. Everybody else is in the 1.6 on the S&Ps and 1.7 on the NASDAQ. So not good. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 423. That's 3.2%. FTSE down 197, 3.3%. CAC around down 157, 3.1. Banks are down 6%. European stocks fall as bank allegations, coronavirus weigh on sentiment, banks down 6%. We'll get to some of those allegations story in a second. It was all over Bloomberg. I was looking at it last night. Nikkei actually up 40 points, 0.2%. Last night we opened down, I think, at 2018 in the spoos, and then I checked again later, and we were actually up a point. And then this, obviously the carnage came after that. Shanghai down 21.6%, Hang Seng down 504. That's a full 2%. This is a review of Friday. This is a while ago. Dow Jones was down 244. S&P was down 37. NASDAQ down 117. So Friday was a crummy day. Bonds, 0.66. These things are still not going anywhere. One minus 0.51. Japan hanging even by more of a threat. Minus plus 0.006 positive. Oil down 79 cents, 40.32. Brent down 82 cents, 42.33. Natural gas down 4 cents, that's $2. Gold, whack whack, down 25 hours, 19.36. Silver down 73 cents, 26.39. Copper down 3 cents, 308, still above $3. Anybody got for us traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. A couple of issues down south, Chief. I-57 northbound at West Stunkel Road. There is an overturned vehicle that's blocking the left lane. So you'll have to navigate around that with crews on the scene. And then north east of there on the Bishop Ford, a rollover accident blocking the two right lanes on the outbound side of the Bishop Ford at 159th Street. So the Dan Ryan 8094 is up to 37 minutes. So some solid traffic on the Bishop Ford and on the Ryan due to this rollover crash that's blocking the two right lanes on the outbound Bishop Ford at 159th. No issues coming inbound on the Ryan. Same for I-57 once you get past that crash down south at West Stunkel Road. I-55 has been quiet all morning. Same for the Eisenhower in both directions. Edens and Kennedy are looking good. Off the expressways, there is an accident in the western suburbs, Route 83, which is Kingery Highway at North Avenue. There is a crash. Everything else is good out there. Weather today, a beautiful day in store for us here in Chicagoland I guess we're almost late September now. Sunshine, a high of 75. Right now it's clear and 57 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 104. Right now it's clear and 80. In sports, the Bears are 2-0. Didn't look good in the second half yesterday. It was kind of a flip of the week before, where they were really bad in the first half and then really good in the fourth quarter. Yesterday, the Bears were really good in the first half and had a 17-0 halftime lead. Could have been even more if Anthony Miller didn't drop a wide-open touchdown pass. But Bears looked good, and then in the second half, they couldn't do anything. They couldn't move the ball. The Giants came roaring back and had a chance to win the game at the end, but the Bears stopped them inside the 10-yard line as time expired and held on to beat the New York Giants 17-13 to improve 2-0. David Montgomery tweaked his neck but did return and had a really good game. 16 carries for 82 yards. He also caught 3 balls for 45 yards and a touchdown. He was probably your player of the game on offense because Allen Robinson and Jimmy Graham were very quiet. Mitchell Trubisky had a very good first half and then struggled mightily in the second half. He finished 18-28, 190 yards, 2 touchdowns, but also had 2 interceptions, and he ran 4 times for 16 yards. So the Bears are 2-0, and they'll be at the Atlanta Falcons next week, who are 0-2 and blew a huge lead against the Cowboys yesterday.
Yeah, they do that. Wow.
That was brutal. Cardinals beat the Washington professional football team 30-15. So the Arizona Cardinals, behind Kyler Murray and an explosive offense, are 2-0, and they look really good.
How did they get good all of a sudden?
They got Kyler Murray, the number one overall pick at quarterback, and completely turned their whole organization around. Sunday Night Football last night was a terrific game, and the Seahawks held on to beat the Patriots 35-30. Cam Newton was stopped on a QB sneak inside the 2-yard line as time expired, and the Seahawks held on to win that one. In baseball, the Cubs lost 2 of 3 and only scored 2 runs in the 3-game series against the Minnesota Twins. They were shut out last night at Wrigley 4-0. White Sox lost 2 of 3 to the Cincinnati Reds. They were blown out 7-3 yesterday. Diamondbacks lost to the Astros 3-2. So as we head into the final week of the Major League Baseball regular season, we'll take a look at our standings. The White Sox have clinched a playoff spot, but still have not clinched the division. They're at 34-19. First place in the AL Central, 2 up on the second place Minnesota Twins, 5 up on the third place Indians, with 6 games to go for the White Sox. The Cubs, after a horrible weekend, are still in first place, but their lead is down to 3.5 games. And just 2 in the loss column over the second place St. Louis Cardinals. Cubs are 31-22. Cardinals are 3.5 back. Reds are 4.5 back. And the Red Hot Brewers, who have won 4 in a row, are 4.5 back as well. So that will be a tough stretch here. And the Cubs have 7 games remaining on their schedule.
They have 4 with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, 4 with Pittsburgh and then 3 with the White Sox. Diamondbacks are last place in the NL West, 20-34, 18 games behind the first place Dodgers. Diamondbacks are done.
If they blow this against Pittsburgh and a team that's already clinched, that's a new low.
That would be bad. Well, you will blow it if you don't score any runs. And they have not been scoring runs. Really, all year they've struggled, and this last few games were unwatchable. Lastly, the U.S. Open. Bryson DeChambeau wins at Winged Foot, shooting a 6-under, wins by 6 shots. Over second place Matthew Wolf, who finished at even par. No one else was at even par. DeChambeau was the only one under par for the tournament. It's 6 under, and he had 69, 68, 70, and then finished strong with a 67 to win the U.S. Open, his first major title. He becomes the third golfer ever to win the Nash NCAA title, the U.S. Amateur title, and the U.S. Open, joining Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. Chief.
Where do you go to college?
I'll have to look that up. I'm not sure.
He, speaking of college, it looks like the Pac-10 is going to play. Or the Pac-12.
I'm
really
shocked.
Yeah, shocked. And now Kevin sent something out about how they're saying that the reason why they canceled was because all the COVID statistics that weren't good. So they made a bad decision based on COVID decisions that were inflated.
Interesting. By the way, Bryson DeChambeau was born in Modesto, California. He went to SMU, actually, in Dallas.
Really?
Southern Methodist, yep. And he won a national title there.
Well, this kid from Wolf. Hey, John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
All right. He would have been he'd have graduated this year. He'd been a senior.
Yeah, Wolf, who finished second.
Yeah. He looked good on Saturday. But that course is really something. Did you see the picture of Babe Ruth playing there?
I did not see that. But Wolf... His round was interesting because he shot a 60. His round followed the course. So the course played its easiest, you know, on Thursday and Saturday and played its toughest on Friday and Sunday. Listen to Matthew Wolf's scores. 66 and then 74, 65 and then 75.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he was really stuck to the script there.
Well, once you get in that rough there, I mean, he had a 65 on Saturday and he only hit 2 fairways.
Right, which is crazy.
He had a couple of luckouts where he was was bouncing in the tall grass and then ended up in the short grass. And he also has, DeChambeau, hooked the hell out of one, and it should have been out of bounds. And then but somehow it bounced, when he landed in the rough, he bounced off one of the trees instead of going out of bounds. And that was, you know, that was worth
That's a break.
A shot or two. Hey, you know what? That Kansas City game, not that I, sorry, Jim, not that I'm all over the refs. The refs blew that game. Those guys should have won. They should have lost. They went for the 2. That guy pulled his helmet off in the end zone, and everybody in the booth's going, "That's a helmet. That's a whatever. It's a penalty." Yet they didn't call him on it, and that's when they went for the 2. If they'd given them a 15-yard penalty, there's no way they would have gone.
Right.
Two
who,
from the
who
17.
Pulled their helmet off?
Who's the
receiver? Or?
Receiver with the half black, half blonde hair.
Oh, yeah, Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
So I didn't see. I saw that they scored the touchdown. I saw that they went for 2. I did not see the helmet thing, and I didn't have the sound on, so I missed that.
But, yeah, because then.
Yeah, that is the rule. If you pull your helmet off on the field of play, as you know, as part of a celebration or anything like that, it's an automatic unsportsmanlike conduct. Now, I don't know if that would be enforced. After the play,
you have your choice.
Okay,
because they even went to the their hotshot old referee in New York, and he goes, I have no idea why that wasn't called. And you get a chance to take it either on the extra point or the kickoff.
Wow. Yeah. That and, of course, they would have taken it on the extra point there. And,
yeah.
And, yeah, Kansas City, you would think, would have had to settle for an extra. Well, they might have still gone for it. I don't know, but it would have been like a 17-yard
Yeah, I doubt if they'd have done that. All right, John, make sense of why we're down 50-some points and Dow down 500 when last night it wasn't anything. What, other than the same stuff, I'm just reading here my old emails, and this is a new record. Ginsburg, she dies at 6:45 at 8 o'clock. McConnell's already saying he's voting on it. Was the body even cold?
Of course, the conspiracy theorists think that she was dead a long time ago, so...
Well, that's possible. I still think that, what's his name, was killed at the ranch. What's his name?
Oh, Scalia.
Yeah. Let's see, the guy's got all those
issues.
Yeah,
that whole thing, the way that the coroner's, so-called coroner's investigation was carried out, I mean, the death certificate was signed virtually, you know, over the telephone without any inspection of the body. The family didn't, you know, allow for an autopsy or anything. I mean, that to me is one of the weirdest demises of a public official in the 20th century.
Well, the dude's got nothing but health issues, and he goes to some right-wing camp where we're in the middle of nowhere, where the ambulance is like a 59 Chevy with the one bulb on the top. Like, you know, like, what's
you couldn't write, you know, gothic fiction like this.
No. Not saying anything bad happened, but boy, it's not exactly the spot.
You have to presume that would be the place to do something like that if you could, yeah. If you wanted to do it anywhere. You could get away with it in such a remote place like that. So.
All right, some of this stuff is weird. John, what do you... I was shocked all weekend, you know, you being the attorney. I don't know why, but I should be read my Constitution more like you and Lou. I didn't realize that the nine Justice Supreme Court was not in the Constitution. That's just a made up number,
right? And it's FDR is the most widely remembered attempt to pack it in the 30s, and was pretty much reviled on the left and the right, even by people with a stake in having the Peck Court. That was seen as a real, you know, a curveball that you know, political expediency should never justify or be used as a reason for it. So I would like to think that we still have that same kind of, you know, fear or loathing towards tampering with the size of the court. And just because you can't get what you want from the court, that you reconfigure the court or enlarge it, that's not a game or, you know, a road you want to go down. So
when you have the same thing,
you know, because there's, you know, some pretty vocal people calling for that. So,
well, I mean, the articles I read, they hoped that that's what the threat would be against the Republicans. Say, just wait till the election. I mean, the same people that refused. I mean, what was Obama's guy? 6 months, and he was pretty much in the middle. That guy. Right, he wasn't.
Well, with Garland, but you know, the whole point of the Republicans have the Senate now with the president. So, and plus Obama was not able to run again, so that he was a true lame duck. There was no way he was going to, you know, be in office after that cycle. So, it's a little different now. I don't know if, you know, if it's different enough to compel people to get behind.
Lindsey Graham was let the people determine who this. Well, this time he doesn't want to do that. Is that guy? Yeah. What does Trump have on him?
Oh, I don't know. Graham has been a complete cipher to me for a while. He kind of goes which way the wind blows, and he has, you know, shot his mouth off in the past, and, you know, kind of made me think, what's this guy got going anyway that he, you know, can say these things or do these things and not pay some kind of political price. I think he's a creature of God knows what forces, but I do think that the Republicans need to put somebody up right away, and they need to try to have a vote on it right away too. I think they're foolish not to. So, and the fact that Ginsburg says she didn't want to give up her seat, you know, until the president changed, I mean, that really isn't her call at all. I mean, that's okay for her to have that sentiment, but I don't think it should become something.
No, I just think it's a follow. It's a if the Obama thing would have happened 12 or 16 years ago, I wouldn't really have as much of an issue. It's the same people 4 years ago. I mean, come on. I mean, who's kidding who?
Oh, you know, yeah. Look at what's been lost in the last 20 years, Tom. I mean, I think Ginsburg was confirmed 98-0.
Yeah.
And I mean, there were no illusions at the time about how liberal she was or how conservative many of the senators were. Same thing with Scalia. They were practically unanimous confirmations votes.
Well, even Ginsburg.
When will that ever happen again? What would any justice look like that could get, you know, 60 votes without some sort of life or death struggle? I don't see that ever coming back.
Well, when Scalia died, I seem to recall Ginsburg saying that she never had never agreed with the guy once, loved being with him. Because he was so much fun to be with, and by the way, he was a spectacular jurist. So I mean, that's a whole different mindset than people even consider now.
Right, and even Elena Kagan said that about Scalia too. That, you know, she really grew to enjoy his company and respected him. There's absolutely no common ground in their politics, but you know, Scalia and Ginsburg loved opera. They could talk about that. You know, they had enough mutual respect where they could get their job done, and even if they loathed each other, they certainly never let that affect how they behaved on the bench or in public. So that's the mark of, you know, a lady or a gentleman, and that doesn't count for too much these days, I don't think. So.
No, do you think we'll ever come back there?
Yeah. No, I don't think. I don't know. There were so many other things would have to change before that would become a possibility. I think they're just going to be life or death struggles now. You know, from here on out, I don't see us ever returning to that kind of decorum.
You think it's has to do with a lot of people, this constant insult and the constant. I mean, I watch the, I'm over in the club doing the bike. I watch the shows in the afternoon, and nobody cares about basketball anymore. It's about he disrespected me. His girlfriend said something bad about Mike. I mean, who gives a crap? I mean, I don't. But everybody seems to now. They have nothing better to do, or what?
Right. And look at the. I mean, I never watched too much daytime TV, you know, but since I've retired, I've watched a little more, and I'm just, you know, amazed at how much stuff there is about this kind of ilk, you know, backbiting, grudges, cheaters, you know, hot bench courtroom, you know, she stole my cell phone, she wrecked my car. Back, you know, or forensic files or cold cases, these horrible human tragedies that are, you know, interspersed with commercials for burial insurance and everything else. And I can't imagine that anybody would ever have classified this as entertainment, you know, 30, 40 years ago. And now it's all there is. So I guess we've redefined entertainment, but it shows you the absolutely worst side of human behavior.
Well, you know what? I'll say this about Trump, then Maddie's going to help us out. Maddie, you do this TikTok deal. ByteDance ended up owning 80% of the place. So how the hell is Trump declaring victory on this thing, where Walmart gets like 5% and somebody else? I have no idea what the accomplishment one it was here on this deal. Does anybody?
No, and I think it was more about, you know, sending up smoke signals that there was a sense that this was really a way of compromising privacy, perhaps national security issues too. And it was just about shaking things up and letting people know all around the world that, you know, we're watching. I don't think this has any kind of effect down the road for any of the concerns that gave rise to this. So I don't know how any of these machinations of carving it up and giving it to other conglomerates prevents TikTok from remaining a security issue or anything else. So I find it amusing in a way, but I can't get my head around what's really going on here, or what's the big objective here, or the long.
Well, whatever the objective seems to be, to go from closing them down on Sunday to having the same people own retain 80% of the place, with the justification evidently is because ByteDance is owned by some Americans that somehow or another, that if you add it all together, the 20% plus the 40% that people own of ByteDance. In theory, Americans own over half the place, but they don't have, they don't run the place. I mean, what's.
No, and it may just be a way of muscling in and getting some kind of control, even a, you know, a minority interest. And, you know, this is kind of what happened with the Harvey Weinstein, you know, mess in Hollywood. I think it was really about control of the studio, and all of the Harvey Weinstein stuff had been percolating for decades, and nobody did anything about it. All of a sudden, it became, you know, a hot button issue. But I think somebody wanted a piece of that, and this was a way to get rid of him and get your foot in the door. And you didn't have to own the studio, but if you owned part of it, that was, you know, that was a start anyway. So I think a lot of the TikTok stuff is that same sort of way of muscling your way in and you know, starting a process. And it may take decades to achieve what you want, but this is how it starts. So I think there is a long game plan here, but don't push me on trying to explain what it is, because I don't know.
Yeah, it's not all that obvious. I mean,
no.
Every time we seem to rattle China's, you know, neck a little bit, 2 months later we declare victory, and you look at it and you go, what did we just do? Nothing.
And that might be what its primary objective was. This whole discussion was just to, you know, poke them in the eye or tweak the Chinese and let them know we're not going to take this as passively as we used to. So it's all tied in, I think, with the trade disputes and tariffs and everything else. It's a way of asserting it in maybe as ineffectual a way as we ever could, but it's letting them know that we're not completely oblivious to what's happening. So I think it's about posturing and presenting a front that, you know, this is a mindset that we are now comfortable with that we weren't comfortable with before. And maybe that's enough, perhaps.
Well, Jimmy Carter, who, of course, is reviled by everybody. Everybody's conservative and stuff. But he, when it came to a recession, when he put Volcker in there, they basically gave him the choice. And, you know, this is in nothing. It's the name of the book I got about the Federal Reserve, and the and they said, "Look, we're going to be going into a recession because the Fed's got to do something. If you want, we can put it off for 6 months till after the election, but it'll be a lot worse." So Carter said, "No, don't do that. Then if it's going to be worse, just do what you have to do." And of course, he ended up losing the election. Now, whether he would have lost any or not, probably. But anyway, that's the kind of now. You don't see, I mean, the one thing that Trump, unfortunately, to my mind, John, has shown me is that a lot of the stuff that you thought was good about government, the gentleman's rules and stuff, one by one, they're gone. like you mentioned before, I mean, Ginsburg was a unanimous choice. I mean, the idea that these guys aren't supposed to trade, that they're not supposed to do this, that there's a gentleman sitting here, or something, they don't change this rule just because you know you can. This anarchy we seem to be working down into. I don't really quite get, and I don't know how it comes back. We probably were doing that almost during the Depression, but people didn't have the communication. I mean, nobody really knew how much the coal miner was pissed off, or the sharecroppers were pissed off. They were in such bad shape. Nobody heard them or could even hear them. But I'm sure they didn't like the place, right? But now everybody can hear everybody. And somehow or another, is there anybody around that can say, look, I'm not going to do that stuff. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to go forward. You keep sniping all you want. I'm not going to pay any attention. I mean, I don't know if Salma's ready to do that, if we can get him back. We really want to degrade down to there are like no rules or no code of conduct here whatsoever.
Well, and I'm afraid what it's done is it's turned maybe otherwise decent people into crusaders, and I would use Ginsburg as an example of this because, she had a long distinguished career at the ACLU and on the bench, you know, and then she became a Supreme Court justice and had a series of serious health crises, and had she retired during the Obama years, where there were plenty of signals that her health had already endangered her life, she could have absolutely made sure that her seat or her, you know, judicial philosophy would be safe in the successor with Obama making the appointment. And she didn't step down. And at the time I thought, what is she banking on happening here? She apparently is going to stick around until the last dog is hung. And that doesn't seem a particularly smart way of making sure that your judicial philosophy survives in that seat. And she took on the this iconic status, and you know, all this documentary in the last couple of years about her and all the outpouring of grief at the death of an 87-year-old person. I get it, but in another way, I don't get it at all. Why didn't she do a smarter thing if she really wanted the results she apparently did? So I think she became too committed to the idea that she was personally her responsibility to stick around and wait until there was a change in the president, and then everything would be okay. And I don't think anybody should think that highly of themselves. I'm very disappointed in her, and I think it kind of turned
Thurgood Marshall did
for me.
Thurgood Marshall did the same thing. You said,
right.
He's a,
oh, yeah, I'm not, she's not yeah. alone, believe me. There's William O. Douglas, too. I mean, there's a lot of people you can point to who hung around way too long because they were so enamored of their power and couldn't imagine surrendering it gracefully and giving somebody else a crack at it. And, you know, that you don't want people like that.
Well, I mean, who's the guy who quit early in the Trump administration? He said, I want to come out now. So, you know, the conservative there. Is it Brennan? Not Brennan. What was his name?
Kennedy.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, well, then Kavanaugh, you know, and that Donnybrook, you know.
Yeah.
Boy.
Well, S&P futures down 49, NASDAQ futures down 141. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen. Mr. Jan Flanagan and Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 52. NASDAQ Futures down 152. So we're 1.6% on the S&Ps and 1.4. It's actually a little better than we were a minute ago. A couple things. There's a big, confidential U.S. government document show big banks moved allegedly illicit funds. Deutsche Bank is on the top of the list and so forth. I want to ask you, Jan, on the legal side of this, legal opinion, it always seems like the people who want to move money around can't, and they don't really need cash. They can move it through banks. When do we get to the point, because it's obvious, it's rampant in our business, that, let's say, FINRA or your police, your state police, your FBI and something, when it comes to money moving around and maybe shouldn't, they don't go after anybody. In my experience, they constantly put regulations down on banks and then come down on the banks. Since when, if the government knows that somebody is, Joe's cartel, why isn't it their responsibility to call the bank and say, by the way, is Joe moving money through your bank? Why is it the bank's responsibility to figure out the money's from Joe's cartel? When did they become part of law enforcement?
Right, I agree. That's just a pretty good way of making sure that there won't be adequate scrutiny, for one thing. Because that's not something that the banks are really, I don't think, set up to do.
Are you still here? I think he just blinked out.
I think he did, too. We'll get him back on.
Several global banks moved large sums of allegedly illicit funds over a period of nearly two decades, despite red flags about the origins of the money. Five global banks appeared most often. HSBC, they've been number one forever. J.P. Morgan, even though everybody loves Jamie Dimon. Deutsche Bank, Standard Charter, and Bank of New York Mellon. These guys went and got, among the types of transactions highlighted by the report, funds processed by J.P. Morgan for potentially corrupt individuals and companies in Venezuela, UK, and Malaysia. Money from a Ponzi scheme moving through HSBC and money linked to an Ukrainian billionaire processed by Deutsche Bank. There's all these forms and stuff that people fill out and everybody's supposed to check on all this stuff. John, you with us?
Yes.
I'm talking about these banks are, I'm not sure exactly how, I mean, I know for us it's really bizarre that we have procedures that we go through. If we get money from a new client and so forth, I mean, we're supposed to check with Interpol. There's procedures that we have that we do here at PTI and RBC, obviously, or IB does the same thing. But the interesting part, Jan, is if those procedures aren't good enough, if somebody somehow manages to avoid Interpol and becomes a no good Nick, that somehow we're supposed to figure this out, even though Interpol doesn't appear to ever get spanked by never having the guy on their list. I mean, this total abdication of responsibility here, I don't get.
Yeah, it encourages criminal activity. I think maybe that's the reason why it is set up this way, because at a certain level, it's always functioned this way, where there were certain people who would look the other way, and massive amounts of money could be diverted or hidden or, you know, laundered, whatever term you want to use. And this could go on without any kind of scrutiny or investigation. The SNL crisis is the one I always come back to as really, you know, a symptom of a bigger problem, that you had a complete fleecing of an industry. And, you know, the same thing with the 2008 meltdown. This involved oversight collapse at many levels, as if it were orchestrated. And there were certainly some kinds of safeguards built into the system where you had, you know, standards, you had, you know, oaths of office, you had professional responsibilities that shouldn't have allowed these kinds of things to happen, but they happened on absolutely massive scales. So I think that the system is, you know, corrupted or corruptible at a certain level, and there is no responsibility in one particular place, internationally or nationally or locally, to prevent this kind of stuff from happening. It's no wonder it happens, and it happens so frequently, too.
Well, there's never any, and I don't know if he's pointing fingers at the right guys. Trump, because everybody, if they don't like him, that seems to be the right guy you want out. So he's probably not the right guy to listen to. But one of my attorney buddies was telling me, we started talking about 9/11 for some, it was on 9/11. So he said one of his buddies was in the FBI or wherever he was, and he was in charge of, not in charge, he was in this group that was looking for, any kind of activity in this country, terrorist activity. And they didn't have the stuff about the people, flying the planes and so forth without looking for a place to land. But the amount of chatter, evidently, on whatever chatter used to be, whether it was phones or whatever, from all the nefarious groups, evidently was off the chart. And they kept jamming that up the stream, saying, look, something's going on here. We don't know what it is, but we need some more resources. Let's find out. And eventually, the four or five guys that were saying that all got transferred to, like, the drug enforcement or something. Nobody wanted to hear it anymore. So, of course, the buildings go down. People get killed. And I'm guessing the people that removed them are still there. Or are they retired handsomely? Or, I mean, it's this constant. I mean, I look at what Trump and Bush and Obama have gone through. And they're the incompetence of the bureaucracy somehow this has to be straightened out. And I don't know how you do it when everybody does nothing but fight all day long.
Right.
I mean, you don't see any efficiency anywhere. I mean, maybe these fires in California. Did the Bureau of Land Management screw up by not doing controlled burns? I don't think it would have made that much difference, but, I don't know how much difference it would have made. I mean, they decide to not do stuff. They do it for a reason. They just didn't feel like doing anything anymore. And by the way, they didn't do it, so they fire everybody. They just sit in the office all day. Or did they fire the guys who were supposed to do it, but decided not to do it anymore? I mean, there's a million questions all over the place here, and I don't see any of them getting asked or any of them answered. Do you?
Nope. And remember, I think it was September 10th, the day before 9/11 in 2001, when Donald Rumsfeld announced that there was, $15 billion, I think, missing from the Pentagon. Some audit had disclosed that there was this unbelievable sum of money that had gone missing. And, of course, the next day, 9/11, the story about the shortfall in the Pentagon never really got talked about again, nor did the questions of what was going on with United Airlines stock in the, leading up to 9/11. All of those were things that should have legitimately bothered people and started some kinds of investigation into who knew at what level and for how long. And none of that ever became part of the official investigation. I don't remember the 9/11 report saying anything about United or the Pentagon or a lot of other things. So now how do you go back and remind people of what was in the news 24 hours before 9/11? And in the meantime, every possible effort has been made to make people forget that such a thing happened. So that there's great power in staging these things that can make you forget about bigger news stories as you are pushed up against some new crisis, whether it's fires out in the West or Ginsburg's death or Black Lives Matter riots or anything, you name it. It's a way of diverting attention from this stuff that really is worthy of investigation and would probably make people horrified.
But we're willing participants in that. We're doing it to ourselves. They had who was the general? Was on 60 Minutes last night. I only caught bits and pieces of it because I was jumping between the Cubs, which I should have not done, in a football game. But was it Mattis or who? Not him. Who was the guy who was on it? Was in the Trump administration? No, he's not. He just wrote this.
Mattis, the defense secretary?
I'm not sure. Maybe if you can find out who was on 60 Minutes last
Bolton?
Night. No. It wasn't him. It was a legitimate general.
He's on all the time. I'll find it.
He just wrote this book, but he was saying, and the book was about the Trump years. He was in there, but it wasn't a tell-all, which sell better, the tell-alls. But he was saying that he thinks the biggest concern in our defense right now is the fact that we're squabbling internally, and everybody sees that we can't do squat, and the leadership is just the
H.R. McMaster.
Yeah, McMaster. I always thought he was a pretty good guy. And you look at the leadership everywhere. Now I'm looking at this article about COVID, and in Europe they're talking about some massive lockdown. Jen, is it as obvious to you or is to me that you lock everybody down as soon as you let them out, everybody gets it again anyway? But it's not going away.
But the lockdowns just prevent the what you want to have happen from happening.
Well, they also put the people behind closed doors. You don't know what's happening to them. Right?
Yep, yep.
And the fact is, people are not dying from it as much as they were. And matter of fact, they said they've had no increase in deaths. I'm reading this article. Well, what are you doing? If 400,000 people get it in the next 2 weeks and they're okay 2 weeks later, haven't you accomplished something? Why is that a bad thing?
Well, and for all the contact tracing that seems to be, you know, underway, even in Illinois, I don't know that anybody has been traced to having, you know, gotten COVID from attending a church service or a funeral. I don't think anybody has.
We have.
I haven't heard about it, but
no,
I know that there are other things that have been traced. But the same thing with restaurants, you know, indoor dining. I don't think any of these should be matters of concern, such that you keep those industries from being able to conduct normal business. The evidence isn't there, and for, you know, politicians who are saying we got to follow the science, it's like, what science are you following?
They're doing whatever they want. Well, they're doing whatever they did before, right? But they're not.
Yeah, well, they're not they're not even listening to their own data. I mean, the data that everybody's paying for, and then we're told at one point that, you know, it's going to be, when we achieve this level, then there won't be any lockdown. And I'm still waiting for, you know, 6 months now for that to happen. So,
well, in Britain, they're
never going to happen. So.
In Britain, they're going to close the pubs at 10 o'clock instead of 11. Now, explain to me exactly what happens in that last hour. You know, if you start to get too close to the lady because you want to bring her home, or she wants to go home with you or something, I guess you just shove that to before 10, don't you?
Yeah.
Just saying, you know. I mean, what would, unless you had absolute, I don't even know what that evidence would look like.
How could that be in any way scientifically arrived at? Sorry.
Bars between 15 minutes of closing and closing. Okay. I mean, I don't know where you get that one, but.
Same thing with, you know, liquor sales not, you know, being legal after 9 p.m. I want to see the data for that.
Well, what happened there was, and you know the story.
And that was, I think, had nothing to do with COVID, frankly. But, you know.
No, it had nothing. Well, never waste a good crisis. Your buddy, Ram father.
Right, right.
That totally had to do with the African-American people who Lori figured would pay attention to her, which they don't. She had some tweets, or whatever you want to call them, pictures of people on the south side. Since his bars were closed and the weather was nice, people were essentially hanging outside liquor stores drinking there. So she said, you know, these people aren't paying attention to me. I can't reach them all with the school paddle, so I'm going to say we're going to close these places too. That's essentially what happened. Am I right, Maddie? I mean, that's exactly what happened.
I wouldn't know.
Well, I mean, they were talking about people hanging outside of liquor stores because the bars were closed. So
and there was absolutely no, as you say, it was about making people, you know, toe the line by making them suffer and show you the price you pay for not following my orders. And most of her orders were totally unscientifically based too. So, you know, it's because she can do this, she decided to do it. And that will never make people, you know, listen too carefully or closely to anything politicians like that say.
Well, they closed the basketball court.
It's all about asserting control and seeing what they can get away with.
They closed the little basketball court on Clybourn because somewhere there's a Facebook or Twitter picture of Maddie Weber and his cutthroats playing ball there on a Monday night. Right, Maddie? He's not. You're on there, I'm sure.
probably not, but.
Well, you'd go play there, right?
I've played there once.
Oh, I thought you said we're doing it every week. You wanted to go back the next week, but the rims were down.
The rims have been taken down.
Yeah. So, I mean.
The rims have been down for months.
All right, John. So, is the market, I mean, there's been people say there's been a split between the market and the economy. Is it finally going to happen that they could be right? I'm not saying they are. And what happens to all the people that are calling people like me saying that they're somewhat nervous but still can't do anything? I had two people last week. Well, if you feel that way, and they weren't customers or anything, they just said, well, now we got this 401k, and it's been doing great for all these years, now I feel real nervous. Okay, you're the one who feels nervous. Not saying you should or you shouldn't. What are you now? Well, I'm 100% in, like, you know, high growth stocks or something. I said, well, go to 40. Oh, yeah, but then I'm not getting interest. You're the one who's nervous. I didn't call you up and say, by the way, you know, my crystal ball says the market's going down. You should get in cash. That's not how this whole conversation started. It started with you calling me, telling me you're nervous. And I'm just saying, if you're nervous, you know, follow your instincts. You can always put the money back in 2 weeks from now. It's not, I mean, the 401ks are easy to move it back and forth. Yeah, but geez, what if it goes up in the meantime? Okay. I mean, what can you say, John, at that point? I mean, this is not even investment advice. This is just...
No, it isn't. And, you know, I mean, I was struck listening to Frank in the first half hour this morning, you know, about his read in Western New York. There's, you know, two cars in that motel parking lot. And if you, I mean, this to me is about the only real take you can get these days, is anecdotal evidence of people who actually travel around and are looking at what else is going on. Because in a shutdown like this, people don't do it. That, you know, travel is risky when they got all these quarantine orders with Illinois and Chicago, and people have not been going out and looking around. And when you do go out and look around, I think people are thunderstruck at exactly how much everything has ground to a halt completely. And at some point, this has to take a toll on the market. I'm surprised in a way it hasn't happened yet. But I can't believe that you can have this kind of lack of activity and have a market that is flourishing and healthy. The two can't be, you know, that unharnessed.
Well, you were talking about last week, though, Jan. You were talking about there's the delay. We've been doing this now for 6 months. I mean, what's the delay between, you know, I listen to people on CNBC all day saying the banks are in great shape and you should buy banks. Well, the XLF's down another 54 cents today, so that's 2%. XLF is the bank piece of the S&P 500. You're the one who was talking about the almost embedded delay. Let's pick a place. I don't even know if they're doing badly. We can say that because they just said they're not going to pay their rent, right? The Palmer House? Let's pick the Palmer House or the Conrad Hilton or whatever the name is. When does the notification get to Jay that, by the way, the check's not coming for the taxes, and when does Citigroup find out that when the check doesn't arrive or what? Imagine at that level you're calling people up and they know where you're coming from. I don't think you just don't send the check. But when does the news get to the top of the bank to where they come out and say, by the way, our loan reserves are now, we just had a quadruple them or something? I mean, when does you actually get the hit, you know, the piece of information that you can't talk your way around. It's just right in front of you.
Well, I think the signs are there, and it has, you know, is making some people at the higher level scramble about what they're going to be doing in the next 4 or 5 months. And I wouldn't be surprised if Pritzker's Fair Tax Amendment isn't in some ways part of this attempt to get what they can out of, you know, the shambles that are going to be created when all this stuff completely collapses. And of course, that won't do anything other than just accelerate, you know, the collapse further by getting people out of Illinois as fast as, you know, this has been always dependent on it. I'm thinking, you know, by year's end, there has to be some kind of reckoning that is clear to people. And I don't say this hoping that it happens, but I just can't see how this can continue much longer. I'm surprised it's taken this long to kind of be reflected in the markets. And it maybe it shows that the markets are far more immune to what's really going on in national economies than we ever suspected. And maybe this is an instructive time for us, and we should, you know, listen up and take note of this, because maybe this frees up, you know, the markets to do what they never thought they could do or were afraid to try to do. But I don't see that as a wise approach. I think there will have to be some kind of adjustment where these two start to look each other in the eye and say that, okay, something's got to give here. It's a game of chicken, which goes first. And clearly the businesses aren't contributing what they have contributed in the past, and people are unemployed and they're despondent, and there's suicides and drug abuse and spousal abuse and child abuse. Things have really gone on a downward spin, and it's accelerating. It isn't getting better. That has to take a toll in the markets at some point.
Well, I would agree, and I would rather hope it goes the other way, that we start getting a plan together. But
Natachi writes it on Twitter, "You guys are wrong. Contact tracing has shown a connection with eating in restaurants. Adults with COVID-19 are twice as likely to have eaten in restaurants, the CDC study has found."
And it's exactly the opposite of the people in Tennessee said.
Well, the Nashville, yeah, the Nashville mayor that you're talking about, yes.
I don't know. Would anybody at this point, John, I mean, I love Natachi, but would anybody at this point believe anything the CDC said? They're so embroiled in their policy in defending it. How can you possibly believe them?
No, they're much too involved in making sure that they don't deviate from what they've been saying all along.
Right.
So if they can't go back and say we're full of, whatever 6 months ago when we told you to do this. So we have to keep that story straight, and we'll adjust the data, I think, to show that we weren't always wrong here, because the price of being wrong is that we're out of a job. So it's all about saving their own necks, and I've become so distrustful of them. The WHO for a long time. That if that's the data you have, then I think you've got to just say, well, there is no data. At least no data you should be changing your life based on, or putting people out of business based on. That isn't reliable to me at
one
all.
One thing I would say back to Natachi is that the thing that's stunning to me about this is that, I mean, I don't see how the class warfare to me is, or the class lack of knowledge, put it that way, not that he has any lack of knowledge, he doesn't, but you look at all the people that are essentially serving you. I mean, if I decided, if I was a Goldman Sachs guy making $1 billion just sitting at home in some big, huge place in Long Island, if I go to the country club, I'm going to expect there to be food there. I'm going to expect the grass to be cut on my golf course. If I expect my mail to show up, God help, my wife wants her Walmart and her Amazon. Who do people think is doing all this stuff for
this, you? This is the point where you are 100% correct. And this is the one that people seem to miss, or they ignore, or they feel bad about, so they don't talk about it. But, the people that can work remotely or have the comfy job where they can, stay home and still get paid are the ones telling everyone, you're an idiot if you're out and about, shut it down, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, yeah, they're ordering their lunch and dinner every day. They expect their Amazon package delivered on time. They expect all the services, the garbage to be picked up, etc. Those are the people that are the absolute worst.
Well, come here. All you got to do, if you want to come down to O'Neill's downtown, I'm not saying you should go to the bar. You look out our window. Fireman next door. I'll bet, what do they do, man? Sometimes 12, 15 runs a day. They do all the expressway work and everything.
Yeah.
They pile in the back of these two trucks.
They're not wearing masks anyway.
Well, but if they, I bet they already had it. How could you not? What if you did?
We walk by them every day. Yeah. They're huddled around in the firehouse laughing and joking, and they're not wearing masks. They don't care.
But how could they possibly?
And I'm not blaming them. They can do whatever they want.
Manny, how could they not have had it by now?
Maybe they did. I mean, who knows?
But even if you wear a mask and you're sitting on people's lap in the back of the truck for a 20-minute ride, the mask isn't doing any good.
Probably not.
So there. I mean, are policemen, two people riding a squad car all day? What about two guys driving, or two or three guys that are riding the garbage truck? I mean, the mask isn't helping them. It's not like how do you social
distance?
But
that's the greater point. Is we don't care about them.
No, we don't care about them.
I mean, I think you and I care about them. I think John cares about them. But the people that are calling everyone idiots and shut it down and who cares? We all got to hunker down for six more months. But by the way, half of you that I don't care about, you need to keep doing your work because
as long as you don't, as long as you don't come near me.
Right. That's the people that are,
I mean, you go to Home Depot, you expect somebody there, right?
Of course.
Yeah. If I call the police or the fire department, I don't want to, have them, phone in a squad car virtually. I'd like there to be somebody here. And Tom, I'll use myself as an example doing the census. I have rung hundreds of doorbells in the last 3 months. And crawled up, I don't know how many scuzzy front porches, and handled the railings, and walked along in apartment building corridors, and banged on doors, and accosted people on the street, and asked them what they can tell me about what's going on in this house. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of these encounters, and I try to keep. I wear a mask when I'm face to face to people. I have hand sanitizer in my little census bag that I carry with me all the time, and I try to stay 6 feet away from everybody, but if I don't have the virus yet, then it can't be much of a virus. I'm sorry.
Maybe you're
is it worth just standing on your head about and putting everybody out of business over or killing off industries over? This is, again, just my anecdotal evidence, and I'm not expecting anybody to be persuaded by it, and I'm not saying I'm a particularly healthy, immune person to diseases, but all I can do is base my thinking here on what I know personally, and I'm just floored. And people are now, if anything, retreating into their own personal lockdowns. I see more people
right,
on the street
yeah.
now in my neighborhood wearing masks than I did 2 weeks ago.
Well, what
before you? I mean, it was in Walgreens, everybody wore a mask in the grocery store, but on the street, I saw many people without masks. Not anymore. So I think there's been a kind of shift of thinking here, and you don't need people telling you what to do if you've decided I'm going to do this, and I don't need to be told this. And that is very disheartening to me because I think now it's going to be easier to make these people suffer endlessly and even more horribly than they have already.
Well, if everybody went and bought themselves 500 good masks, and every 4 hours they change it every time they walk by somebody. I actually think it probably could help, but the way everybody else wears them, the neck gaiters they pull up in baseball and pull right down again, if anything. Does anybody think that's doing anybody?
It's not. Those are useless. I tend to be pretty left-leaning on most things. Not all things, but on a lot of things. I think they're way out of... I think they're insane about this particular issue. I would open everything up tomorrow and let people start making choices because we can't put everyone out of business. And if you have a company where your people can work from home, let them work from home. I got no issue with that. But you can't force businesses that want to do business to be closed anymore. You can't do it.
Why do you think that, Frank, of course, is the one who tells me all this stuff that, according to him, Department of Health Education, the Education Department is, not going back to work in Washington the second quarter or something, John? How do you tell people to go back to school? First thing, if I was those president, hey, you idiots, get back to work. What are you doing?
Well, I really have no issue that if you're capable of working remotely to do that, whether it's every day or most of the time, I got no issue with that. But this idea that we're forcing businesses to stay closed and they're going out of business, that's insanity. And it's got to stop.
What do you think about the idea of... I don't know if it's Arlington Heights. I don't want to put the word out there, but it might not be them. Where people are essentially renting the schools, and charging parents $50 a day for the kids to do the remote learning at the school because the teachers won't come in.
To me, that gives a lie to what the teachers' unions have been telling everybody.
Yeah,
if you can have these people sitting in a classroom online, well, why don't we get a teacher in there who's willing to teach, and you duke it out with your union or you cross the picket line or whatever it involves. But how can you possibly sell people on this idea that it's unsafe to be in a classroom?
Well, we maybe need a...
charging people to be there.
I'm not the massive fan everybody else is, but maybe you need a guy like Ronald Reagan who is a little simpler and says, okay, at Thanksgiving, if you don't come to work, you're not getting paid. I mean, it just has to be a simple solution. We got to pick a date and we just got to stick with it. I mean, private people, like Maddie says, you do whatever you want. And some people probably found out they're better off at home. Who knows? But I don't know how often that is. But I think in that case, the chairman should, on his own volition, call his own company 3 or 4 times a day and really find out if people's picking up the phone. Because I'll tell you what, people try to call Secretary of State's office, those kinds of places have gotten nowhere. So they might think they're doing fine at home, but I'm not so sure any other people would. John, thank you very much, bud. SP Futures down 60. Come back. We have Mr. Mike Hart. We're talking volatility in this market. I'm very interested to see what Mike has to say because I got a trade today. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands,
but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Out. He's Matt Weber on the board with Mr. Mike Card, our volatility and market expert. Expert. Used to be the stuff on Channel 26. Dow futures now down 601. Ouch. NASDAQ futures down 178. S&P futures down 62. So that's almost 2% on the S&P. It's 2.2% there. And on the Dow, Europe, much worse. DAX down 397. It's 3%. FTSE down 184. That's 3%. CAC Iran down 146. 2.95%. So we'll give them a break. Asia, not the same. Nikkei actually up 40 points, 0.2%. Shanghai down 21.6. Again, last night, we opened down and then we came back to flat. So, this all happened later then. Mike's going to tell us exactly why this happened. We're Hang Seng down 504. That's 2%. Review of Friday. Dow Jones was down 244. S&P was down 37. NASDAQ down 117. So a bad day Friday. Seemingly like another bad day today. 10-year. Now it's down to 0.65. A Bun minus 0.52. Japan just hanging positive at 0.006 positive. So the oil down 96 cents, 40.15, still hanging above 40, at least for now. Brent down 98 cents, 42.17. Natural gas down almost 8 cents, 197 below 2 bucks. RBOB, 118. Gold down as well, down $32, 19.29. Silver down 80 cents. Copper down 2 cents to 309. Whatever it is today, it's down. Matty, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Still working on that crash on the outbound Bishop Ford. This was a bad rollover crash that happened earlier this morning, and it's still cleanup is underway, blocking the two right lanes at 159th Street on the outbound I-94 Bishop Ford. So avoid that if at all possible. Dan Ryan to 8094 is up to 36 minutes. So expect delays while crews continue the cleanup of that crash on the outbound Ford at 159th. No issues otherwise on any of the area expressways, it would appear. Dan Ryan looking good on the inbound side, same for I-57. Stevenson has been quiet all morning. Eisenhower looking good. Kennedy, you'll slow down a little bit as you approach Division heading into downtown, but no accidents or issues to report. We do have a disabled vehicle on the Tri-State southbound at 95th Street that's blocking the right lane, so there's a bit of a slowdown to get around that, but not major delays resulting from that. Everything else is looking good out there as far as the expressways are concerned. Off the expressways, northwest suburbs, Lake Street at Arlington Drive, which is also Bartles Road, there is a crash. And then actually, that one just went away. So that's it. Everything looking good out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, a beautiful day, low humidity, a high of 75. Right now it's clear and 58 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 104. Right now it's clear and 81. In sports, Bears are 2-0. They built a 17-0 lead and then held on to beat the Giants 17-13. So they'll be at Atlanta next week looking to go 3-0. Cardinals are 2-0 as well. They blew out Washington 30-15. Sunday Night Football, it was the Seahawks holding on to beat the Patriots 35-30. Cam Newton was stopped on a QB run inside the 2-yard line as time expired. So the Seahawks held on to win that one by 5. In baseball, Cubs lost 2 of 3 at home to the Twins in their last home series of the regular season. They were shut out last night 4-0. Cubs scored just 2 runs in the 3-game series. They're 3.5 up on St. Louis in the NL Central with 7 games to play as we enter the final week of the season. White Sox lost 2 of 3 to the Reds. They lost 7-3 last night. Sox are 2 up on the Twins, and the Sox have 6 games remaining on their schedule. Diamondbacks lost to the Astros 3-2. And U.S. Open saw Bryson DeChambeau win at Winged Foot in New York. He shot a 6-under. He was the only player in the field under par, and he won by 6 shots. Chief.
Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing great, Chief. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Can you tell us exactly what happened last night and at what time it sent us in the crapo?
For whatever reason, I fell asleep last night. Doesn't happen too often, but I missed exactly the action last night. But I think it's really interesting. You said everything's red on the board today. And that's right, beyond bonds are up a little bit. But typically you see an inverse correlation between heavy metals and the market. But what we're seeing right now is the market's actually decreasing along with metals. So you don't see that as often as you see metals going higher when the market's down, especially down 2.2%, you'd expect to see maybe more of a flight to safety. But what we've seen for the past, I don't know, few months, is we've seen gold rally with the market. So that correlation, as it continues to go on, and you have a 3-month rolling correlation, it starts to stop being inverse and start to move positive. So I think we're still seeing some positive correlation here.
What if you just had a guess off the top of your head, because everybody's got an opinion as to why the market's down, you know, maybe Matty Weber's team loses tonight, or you guys are going to win again tonight, Matty.
We're playing a team that's 1-0. Could be interesting.
This is a pretty serious sell-off, especially after Friday and last week. I'm kind of surprised. I mean, the European situation, maybe them down 3% seems to have started it, because Japan and those places weren't down that much.
It's not uncommon to see our market really move off of foreign markets. I mean, I remember, was it a year ago or a year and a half ago when you had the Chinese currency situation, and we saw a huge move in our market around just that situation. So, you know, China goes down, and all of a sudden there's this kind of contagion that spreads to the rest of the markets, and the U.S. is not immune to it, so I wouldn't be surprised if there's a real connect there. But also, I think, you know, going back 2 weeks when we started seeing a sell-off in the market, I think we were at such a high level. We saw volatility actually expanding as we were moving higher. It was just a matter of time before that rubber band broke, and I think it may have broken because we saw the sell-off. Everyone was kind of waiting for a rebound, but we just broke lows that we saw not too long ago. So now that we're breaking new lows, not that I'm a technical analyzer or anything, but you know, you break new lows, and sometimes there's a lot of space for it to move, especially the downside.
Well, we've been doing some. We get money to put in usually, like, you know, somewhat all the time. It's intermittent, but somewhat all the time. And last week we ended up. with somebody who actually wanted to try. I mentioned to you last week, Mike, that I was my protected index program. I always thought that because not very many people would do it, you get more of a spread in the volatility if you actually went the other way, which obviously no retail client would want to do, where you actually bought the calls, shorted the spider or whatever you're shorting, and then sold the puts because the puts have a higher value usually than the calls. Although not so much lately. So we started doing this on Wednesday. Mike, I think we've already adjusted it 5 times in 3 days.
Yeah. And so when you're talking options, you're talking about standard deviations of moves. So, you know, you have this expected range, and what happens is you start getting a move that goes outside that expected range. Volatility increases. You get a wider expected range. But it's unusual to see that many adjustments that you're going to have to make in such a short period of time. It's really interesting. And, you know, when I see a move like this today, immediately I say, well, what is volatility telling us about this situation? And it's not painting a really pretty picture right now, because we are trading right around 30 in the VIX. Is that high or low? If you say it's trading 30 in the VIX, well, one, it's telling you basically more what we'd expect over the course of a year. Right now, the market's expecting plus or minus a 30% move. Historically, when you look at averages, well, the average is a little higher, but it's a little higher than the mean, or the medium, rather, and that's right around 15.5. So we're trading double what typically we see in volatility. And actually, volatility, as early as, like, beginning of last year, was down to 9. I mean, yeah. All-time lows. And now we're trending at an area we haven't seen in a long time. 30 is pretty high, and up 4 points today is a lot. And if you have options on, and you see volatility spike like that, well, if you're long options, that's fantastic. You want to see them. You want to see a spike like that. If you're short options, it's a real problem, because short options, you basically want volatility to contract. When you start seeing movement like this, it's not good for the short sellers out there
Well, just to give you an example, I'm getting fuzzy with dates, but I think it was Wednesday morning, might have been Tuesday afternoon, in a spider. Now, a spider, you know, it's an S&P 500, for God's sake. We were at 342, so we bought a couple extra calls, so we bought, like, the 342 calls short of the spider. I think we sold, like, the 326 puts for like, this Wednesday. We've just gone through to 326 straight, $16 out of the money. And now we just went through that strike like dinner through a goose. I mean, who would expect that, for God's sake, Mike?
No, you know, it wasn't expected. And to be honest, kind of what I was saying, where volatility expands. Maybe that was the expected move when you put that on. But now if you say, what's a one standard deviation move to the downside, we're looking at around 287 now is what we'd expect for a one standard deviation move. Typically, we look at one standard deviation moves in the options market as sort of that standard baseline of what might be expected. So to the downside, it's within the realm of possibility, actually a one standard deviation possibility, which is 68% of the time, that we're going to see 287 trade. So all of a sudden, with that expanded volatility, you're going to see wider and wider expected range. So right now, you say, well, the market really isn't anticipating a price below 287, but man, we could see that anytime. So if that happens again, not what the market was expecting, but we're also coming off a period that's many multiples of standard deviations to the upside. No one expected the rally we saw.
Well, when you say the market, I mean, you know, clearly I was going to say stocks sometime like, you know, the Boeings and stuff of the world. Who the hell knows if Boeing's even a survivor? I suppose they are, but I hope they are. But you look at some of this other stuff, the stuff that people really like, some of this stuff reminds me of, again, I'm not short it. I don't have a position in it, but, you know, you look at this TTD, you look at this Zoom, God's sake. I mean, we're talking 11 times. Earnings. I mean, not earnings. 11 times of sales. So I mean, you know, I got Zoom this morning trading 4.33 down $5, and I absolutely do not short any of this on my account, but if this thing was 150 tomorrow, I wouldn't say it was too low.
No, absolutely not. When you look at just general price movement, we saw a 100-point spike plus not too long ago, and with that volatility, it just went off the charts. And to see a 100-point move right now, I don't think would be too unexpected. Right now, it's anticipating, I mean, plus or minus within a 73-point move is around where we're looking at for one standard deviation. So, yeah, there's a lot of potential movement in Zoom, for example. But, you know, the fact that you've got a market that broke a little bit, we're seeing the big, big name stocks are giving back a little of their profits, really, just at this point. But you've got things that are outside of there, outside of the actual market, or rather the big name stocks, like Zoom, and they're moving higher. I mean, they haven't been affected by the sell-off whatsoever. They're still moving higher. Even though we're down a little bit today, we're still at near all-time highs. Near all-time highs, but volatility is actually much higher in Zoom than it is in the market right now in general. And when you look at the what we call the IV rank, where volatility is relative to itself, or if you look at the 52-week average and you say, what percentile are we falling in right now? We're in the high end, which is the 54th percentile, really close to the 55th percentile. That's really high, especially in this market. We're considering anything over 10 to be very high right now. So 54 is pretty darn high.
Well, you know, I this is not the world's best story, but I had a client way back in the day, and you know, it was in 2000, and he was a guy who would work for Oracle like forever, and so he decides he's retiring, and he comes out with all his Oracle stock. So he piles it in with us. You know, we'd been in business 10 years, nine years, and the guy says, "I want to protect this stuff," and I'm going, but he was still so bullish on Oracle. He had his 401k, he had it everywhere. And if it went down, he really wanted to buy some more. And stocks, I'm going to say 60-ish. I'm not exactly positive, but something like 60-ish. So, but he didn't think, you know, he wanted like the Armageddon puts. Okay, we buy the 55s. He said, all right, just in case when the market goes crazy or something bad happens, he said, all my money's in one spot. So stock craters to like, you know, 48. So he's down 12 on the stock. Now, of course, he had to pay taxes since his strike price on this stuff was like $10. I think the tax law at the time, I think he had to pay like, you know, $50 ordinary income or something. And the first thing I did was say, let's sell enough to where you at least can pay your income tax. So you don't have that problem. You know, we're not, we don't want to do that. We don't want to sell any. It's our nest egg. I'm going, oh God. So we buy the 55 puts. Stock say drops to 45. So, okay, we're up, you know, $8 on the puts, maybe, and he's down 15 on the stock. So, you know, better than a sharp stick in the eye, but a dull stick in the eye, pretty much, right? So
that's a good way to look at it, yep.
Yeah, and so we end up buying, well, it can't go down much further. Let's buy, like, the 40 puts. Then the thing goes to, like, 35. So now we're up, he's down another $10, and we're up, you know, $3 on those or four. You know, so we're sort of helping, but, you know, not exactly. And then he says, well, hell, there's no way Oracle can go down below like 35. And it went down to like 10. You know, and he had so much issues. It was just a disaster. But the idea is how, you know, I mean, and I went to do a seminar in Brooklyn. Dr. J bagged on me, but that's okay. I love John. And these guys all had Cisco at 60 and it's trading 6. And none of them sold a share, bought a put in. They were convinced that this stock belongs here. You know, like this stock belongs to 433. You know, and maybe it does, and maybe it's going to be 600 2 years from now. Everybody's still at home and blah blah blah, and they start charging more, and there's no competitors. I don't know enough about the place to criticize. I mean, Mike, I don't at all. They could be the next, you know, God knows what, Amazon or Apple or someplace. But by the same token, I'm looking at it going, if all that doesn't happen, if any little, you know, piece of dirt gets in the gears, this thing is priced to be heaven sent. You know, I mean, and we got some of those out there that people are chasing.
Sure. And, you know, when you think about the options market, you were playing it exactly correct. Yeah, I mean, the beauty behind buying, you know, those Armageddon puts or whatever is you're not paying that much for them. So, you know, for a very kind of low cost of capital, you have, when you do see those moves, which are rare to see a move like that, that Oracle saw, but you're buying out of the money puts. And the further out of the money you go, the less you're going to pay. But if you do see that move, it's really, really helpful to have it because the amount of insurance actually starts to really pay for itself. A lot of people don't want to buy insurance because, hey, you're throwing, it feels like you're throwing money away at it. It's a low probability of being successful. But at the same time, if you're paying a small amount and the market does what happens more often than you might think, where a stock moves several standard deviations away from what's expected, that's when those long-term puts, that's when that strategy becomes very successful. And, you know, the other thing with holding stocks and the wishful thinking that you're going to get back to a level that you saw, you know, before the sell-off, statistically, the math doesn't care about history in that sense. Volatility cares about history, but the stock price is the stock price, and that's where it's trading right now, so it is what it is, kind of.
Mike, I think we have a question. Ready?
Yeah, Steve writes in. He says to Chief and Mike, I've listened to the show for some time now and have a question regarding ETFs. ETFs that hold assets are recommended over synthetic ETFs. Any thoughts on a buffered ETF? Is there a preferred base, Dow, S&P, or Russell?
Go ahead, Mike. I don't even know what a buffered one is. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the default for pretty much most traders, and definitely a lot of professionals, we default to the by far most liquid ETF out of all of them is the SPY. It's definitely the most liquid. You're going to find liquidity in all the ETFs that trade market ETFs. So, actually, I'm not positive what he means by buffer, but I assume it, well, I would guess it means, you know, where are you going to find the best liquidity, and where are you going to lay off the most amount of risk when you're talking about options? We almost always default to the S&P 500. Now, if we're trading Apple, Amazon, Google, the big names in the NASDAQ, then we want that high correlation with the NASDAQ. So, part of it also is choosing ETFs that fit your portfolio. So if your portfolio is carrying majority of NASDAQ underlyings, then you should be going into the QQQ. It's still very liquid, not as liquid as the SPY. You just get a lot more volume in the SPY. That's why I say, you know, typically that's what we're going to do, default to. But ETFs, in general, you see less volatility overall. More diversification, less volatility, because the expectation is if you get one big bad move in one stock, well, at least you got 100 other stocks that are going to make up for it.
Right, Jay.
Hopefully.
Do you, Mike, do you do much? I do not. I mean, I certainly don't put anybody in it. When he says buffered, they have stocks that are, you know, two and three times long, or ETFs, two or three times long, two or three times short, that are sort of managed. And, so, and I never put anybody in those because I can't figure out how the hell they can do that on a daily basis.
Well, I avoid them. I totally avoid those leveraged ETFs. And it's a little more complicated to explain, but there's a natural drag that occurs. And you'll see that definitely in, like, USO, UNG. Any ETF that is carrying futures, you're effectively paying that roll every month. So you're selling the low. If it's in contango, you're selling the low, you're buying the high every month. So by selling the low, buying the high, you are going to lose that spread every single month. So people might say, man, I wish I bought USO back when oil went negative, but that would have been good. It would have worked out for you if you bought it even when it was down low, but not as much as you might expect. And there's always this drag to the downside. Especially, we saw that in SVXY.
Oh yeah,
when,
oh, my God. Yeah.
In 2019, when we saw, you know, a huge spike in volatility. This is a leveraged ETF to the downside. It went out at I mean, they don't go out of business because they're not really in business. They're just mathematically set up to multiply or magnify the effect of volatility, and it crushed everyone. In fact, I don't think anyone knew the math until it went out of business, more or less.
Mike, let's just say that there's some real serious arbitrations about that.
I believe it. Yeah, I absolutely believe it because, like I said, no one was expecting. If you have volatility spike, what was it, like 30 points, all of a sudden every short volatility fund, and why would you be short in volatility when it's at 10? I don't know, because there's almost a natural floor at 9, but that's what these funds were doing, so a 30-point spike absolutely knocked them out.
Mike, we got a dash, bud. Thank you very much. S&P futures down 57, NASDAQ futures down 161, kind of on our lows. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I
got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.